Welcome to Shir and Svarno Parshas Chukas. Beginning of the week, we spoke about the lengthy comments of the Svarno regarding the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, again, certainly one of the major aspects of Parshas Chukas. As we move through the Sedra, we begin Perek Chof, and we encounter yet another puzzling aspect of the Torah. One might argue that in many ways it's almost as puzzling as the Parah Aduma, and that is the story of the Mei Meriva, the story of the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu that ultimately dooms him and condemns him to die in the desert, not go into Eretz Yisrael. So as I'll just start off with the words of the Svarno himself, Kvar Rabu Hadeos Be'inyan Chet Mei Meriva. There are many, many different opinions as to what exactly was the sin of the Mei Meriva. Again, the simple telling of the story, the way we generally think about it, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to speak to the rock. Instead, he hits the rock. Hard to understand. First of all, why would Moshe Rabbeinu deviate from what the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling him? Hashem says X, you do Y. It certainly doesn't seem in character with Moshe Rabbeinu. And even if we grant that, that one sin seems a little bit out of proportion. That Moshe Rabbeinu should be condemned to not go into Eretz Yisrael, his lifelong dream, simply because of that sin itself. So how do we? Well, let's talk about the Svarno first. So, it's a little. It's hard to understand, and then the Svarno's introductions. Kvar Rabu Hadeos. There are many, many different opinions, many discussions. You know, certainly not the first time anyone in this room has heard the question. How do we understand the nature of the story and what's going on? So the Svarno over here as well, just as he does with Parah Aduma, has an arichus, speaks at some length, and as we saw with Parah Aduma, presents a very unique and unusual approach to trying to understand something which has puzzled the Mefarshim. So let's take a stab at it. Omnam kishin is bonin be'inin ha-meriva. When we think about, when we contemplate the story of Mei Meriva, roi shenachshov shetia mitzvah sokel bozel ofen sheyakir rishas merivasam. It stands to reason that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu to do would somehow be a response to the rebellious nature of the people, meaning the people clearly are doing something that is arguing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? They're called Mei Meriva. Hema Mei Meriva Sheravu V'nei Yisrael Es Hashem. Right? The story ends off by saying, this place is the Mei Meriva, the waters of strife, where Klal Yisrael, again, fought. They argued with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So clearly Klal Yisrael are doing something wrong. They're doing something improper. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent is to respond to their fighting, to get them to realize that they're doing something wrong, and to get them to confess their sins, to do tshuva, and to ultimately have their sins forgiven. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't simply want to give them water. He wants to give them water in a way which will get them to do tshuva and, swear off the arguments with Hashem that they had been engaged in. So, just as a starting point, obviously, says the Svarno, if the point of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe and Aaron to do was to do something which would facilitate the tshuva of Klal Yisrael, the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu involved that they didn't do that, and they did something instead which would not facilitate the tshuva of Klal Yisrael. So that's a starting point. In other words, now we can begin to understand a little bit more why the sin was as great as it was, according to the Svarno. If it's, quote-unquote, just HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, bring out the water in this way, and they brought out the water in that way, all right, bottom line, they had water. What does it really matter? Whether, they spoke to the rock or they hit the rock, bottom line, the result is similar, if not the same thing. But if there's something about what they were commanded to do which would have uniquely enabled Klal Yisrael to do tshuva, And that opportunity was missed. Again, you still have the question, okay, a missed opportunity, is that enough to keep Moshe Rabbeinu from coming into Eretz Yisrael? But at least you understand that the deviation has bigger implications. It's not just a question of, you know, doing X instead of Y. So let's continue to probe.
What's the tshuva from?
Let's continue to probe. Omnam hamiriva imosha hoisa ba'omram shahoisa han hagaso bilti shlema. So what were they arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu about? In other words, what was the, you know, they said we're thirsty. Okay, but apparently there's more to it than just saying we're thirsty. So what they were fighting with Moshe Rabbeinu about was that the people claimed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not overseeing them, he was not looking out for them in the fullest way. The people complain, you brought us into this really lousy desert here where we can't find anything to drink. And it's not simply that we have a specific problem, we're thirsty. But we're thirsty, and the fact that we're thirsty shows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's leadership is lacking in some way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't watching out for us properly, either because, again, Chalila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't watch out for us properly, or he chooses not to watch out for us properly. They're questioning the Hashkacha, they're questioning the oversight of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'al hokel yisbarach ha'isa mirivasam, and they were arguing with Hashem, ba'amram sh'otziya me'eretz no'sheves tova el eretz midbar. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of a beautiful land, Egypt. It was from the perspective of the land itself, it was a beautiful land. Had a lot of, you know, a lush area. And he took us to a desert. So, ulahodiyam es risham bozeh, in order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to respond in a way that would truly show them that they're wrong, hischayiv shiyiyah neis modiya shashliach hayo manhig b'shleimus. The kind of miracle that would convince the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was truly in charge in the fullest sense of the term had to be a very unique type of miracle. Right? In other words, any old miracle wouldn't do. If they were questioning the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't really have or choose to utilize his hashkacha in the fullest sense of the term, there would need to be a miracle that would somehow address that, that would show them beyond any shadow of a doubt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. Okay, so that's stepping stone number two. They're questioning the full hashkacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They need a response which is going to affirm the full hashkacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So step three, the Sfarno now outlines the following idea. Very, very unique idea. The three types of miracles, says the Sfarno, that we find in Tanakh. Ha'echad, huneis nistar. The first type of miracle is what he calls a hidden miracle. That is to say, why is it hidden? A miracle that manifests itself in natural terms. Right, so this idea, the Neis Nistar, is an idea which the Ramban certainly talks about a lot. Again, we see the Sfarno draws on the Ramban very much. Right, the Ramban talks about the Nisim Shebeteva, you know, the miracles that are in nature itself. So, for instance, Yeridas Hamatar, you know, there's a drought. We need rain, so the rain comes down. Vahimayt Menachaloy Menatzaros. People are sick. People are in distress, and you know, the person asks to be saved from sickness and distress. And that can happen through natural means. Oh, the person goes to the doctor, and Baruch Hashem, you know, the doctor cures him of his illness. The person, you know, needs money, and all of a sudden, Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu causes the guy to find a job, right? So, you know, those are all nisim, they're miracles, but they're nisim nistarim, they're hidden miracles. How do you bring about a hidden miracle? Wouldn't we like to know, right? So he says, V'zeh amin min anisim yasigiu ad tzadikim tfilosam. A tzaddik can daven and can convince, as it were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send a hidden miracle. Right? A tzaddik davens for rain, as we find all the stories in Masechta Tainus. A tzaddik davens for parnasa, for refuah, and all these sort of things. So the tefillah of the tzaddik can be powerful enough to bring about these nisim shebeteva. Truth is, he talks about tzaddikim davening. I think it would be true as well for a regular person. I mean, that's what we daven three times a day in Shmoneh Esrei. Refo'enu Hashem v'nei rafei. Baruch aleinu asashana asos. Essentially, what we're asking for is these very nisim nistarim, these very hidden miracles. So hidden miracles can be brought about through prayer. That's one level of miracle. A second level of miracle. Habeis hunes nigla. Lo yuchal hateva lasoso ba'osa ha'ofen. Avoli aseu achar tnuos rabos b'meshech zman. The second type of miracle is a miracle which is more of an open miracle. So what does that mean? It's a miracle that ordinarily doesn't happen through natural means, and where the miracle takes place at a speed and in a way which isn't normally associated with teva, with you know, the natural laws around us. But, you know, the miracle is conceivable under certain circumstances. It could take place. It would be rare that it would take place. It would take a lot of time and a lot of effort to take place. And what's miraculous is that this type of miracle takes place instantaneously. Right? So, for instance, he gives an example of the other water and rock story that we find at the end of Parshas B'Shalach. Right? So, again, over there, the people come to refeed them. They're thirsty, they want water. There Moshe Rabbeinu, apparently correctly, takes his staff and hits the rock, and water comes out from the rock. Now, that's miraculous. Why is it miraculous? Because ordinarily, you go over to a rock and you hit it, water doesn't start flowing from it. But it's not quite an entirely supernatural occurrence, because the truth is, if you start drilling in the rock, you know, and you go deep enough, it's not inconceivable that you could discover water, and that the water would start flowing forth from the rock itself. So what makes that a nes, what makes that a miracle, is the fashion, the immediacy in which the water comes forth from the rock. But per se, using force to, you know, pull water out of a rock, it could happen, you know. It would be unusual just to strike it and have the water burst forth like that. That seems to be miraculous. But, you know, the broader idea of bringing forth water from a rock, it could happen, right? So the truth is, there's a similar idea he quotes over here. Kriyas Yamsuf itself, one of the great miracles that we always talk about, falls into this category, right? The sea splits. But as the Ramban himself writes, and again, you know, the Sfarad doesn't quote this Ramban, but I think he's relying on the idea of the Ramban. The Ramban writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the wind blow the entire night before the Yam Suf split. And why is that? So writes the Ramban, so that way a person who was really skeptical would still have room to be skeptical. And he could always come along and say, you know why the sea split? Because the wind was blowing. In fact, there are, to this day, you know, there are certain people, speaking from a secular perspective, who will admit to the veracity of the story of Kriyas Yamsuf. And they will say, you know, to explain it, yeah, we find every once in a while that, you know, that waters split under certain circumstances. You know, that the tide can come in a certain way. And we find phenomena like that, where all of a sudden, you know, a river bank will be rendered dry, you know, and all of the water will disappear for a short period of time. Will be pushed aside for a short period of time. Now, okay, perhaps that's true. Perhaps, you know, every once in a long while things like that happen. But what makes it, you know, more miraculous is that it happened at just the right time. You know, it was an incredible, incredible time.
How are you supposed to deal with those, I don't know, fortune that say they were divided into 12 different lanes?
Yeah, you know, Chinami, that's harder to deal with from a, you know, if you got to take the perspective, it's all just natural. You know, Chinami, but
why do we apply this type of situation to the 6-day war?
Yeah. So the truth is this. Right, right. So, you know, the six-day war could fall into the second category. You know, in other words, it's something the historians, the students of war say that it was incredibly unusual that all of the pieces came together in that particular way. Per se, you know, there was nothing that happened that went against the laws of nature during the six-day war, but the likelihood of everything coming together the way it did was statistically very improbable, right? So that's, I think, what he would categorize the second category as being, meaning it's not supernatural per se. It could happen, but it's very, very unusual that it should happen in just that way, in just that time. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring about such a miracle of the second type, Zeh Amin Min Hanisim, Yaseo Akel Yisparach Hayidei Avodov, Im Hakdomas Eze Tnua Mesuderes Mi'ito. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring about this second miracle, this second type of miracle, call it a quasi-supernatural miracle, he does it by having one of the Nevi'im or the like perform some kind of action in order to facilitate the miracle taking place. Right? So just to take, you know, an example which is relevant to over here. So Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Parshas Beshalach causes the water unusually to flow from the rock. How does he do so? By hitting the rock. So in other words, there's an action taken by Moshe Rabbeinu which brings about this supernatural, this quasi-supernatural type of miracle. V'hagimel. But there's a third type of miracle, and that's as follows. Hu min min hanisim shlo yuchal hateva la'asoso b'shum ofen. There's a kind of miracle which is clearly supernatural and could never happen under any circumstances in a natural fashion. V'zeh ha-min yaseh ha-kel yis'ale al yidei avodav b'dibur bilvod. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring about this third type of miracle, purely supernatural, he brings it about through speech. So, why speech? She'u pu'ula sichlis. Because speech is more spiritual, it's more intellectual, and as such, it's more appropriate to trigger this third kind of miracle through speech than through actions alone, which trigger the second type of miracle. Right. Right, so according to the Sfarno, it's interesting, you know, so the Mak of Kinim, which is brought about by action, I think the Sfarno would characterize as type number two, not type number three. In other words, the idea, you know, the idea that living creatures are sometimes born out of dust and particles is an idea certainly, again, there's a lot of discussion scientifically whether that happens or not, but the idea that kinim are born from filth and you know, dirt and the like certainly is an idea that exists in the Tanakh and in Chazal. You know, so the idea per se of kinim emerging, you know, from piach kivshon, you know, from offer, from dirt, is something that per se wouldn't be unnatural, just very unnatural that would happen under those circumstances on such a scale. And the Chartum, when they say Etzba Elokim Hi, are saying, we acknowledge that it's a miracle type 2, because although it's theoretically possible to happen under different circumstances, the fact that it happened in this way and this magnitude at this particular time, That's like Etzba Elokim. The same way with the Six-Day War, again, to bring a modern-day analogy, you know, we can say Etzba Elokim Hi, even though, you know, there's nothing overtly supernatural, it's just about the statistical likelihood of these things happening at this particular time. So this third type of miracle is brought about through dibur, through speech. And he brings two examples of this third type of supernatural miracle, which you can never really, you know, clearly is a violation of the laws of nature. One is from last week's parasha. Vahike chaloso ledaber, when Moshe Rabbeinu stopped speaking to the men of Korach's rebellion about how they were going to be punished, vatiftacha aretz espiha, the ground opened up its mouth and swallowed them up. So you say, why is that supernatural? That's an earthquake. We find that all the time. So this Sfarah actually comments, we didn't mention it last time, but last week, but in Parshas Korach, the Sfarno comments, don't think that what happened with Korach was a regular earthquake. With an earthquake, sometimes you can have a sinkhole or a fissure that opens up in the ground and people fall in. Yeah, that's a natural occurrence. But what happened with Korach is that the earth opened up its mouth, swallowed them, and then closed up over them immediately. Right? That's supernatural. That doesn't happen, you know? So that's, you know, that's a miracle class 3, you know, Sug Gimel. Similarly, another example, so the story related in Sefer Yehoshua, where Yehoshua and his men are fighting against the Knanim, and Yehoshua calls upon the sun to stand still in the sky, Shemesh Begivon Dom, and the sun stays where it is, right? Clearly something supernatural. How does that come about? He doesn't wave a stick. He doesn't pick his hands up or down or anything like that. He speaks. So speech, says the Sfarno, triggers this third type of miracle. So he says, now putting all of this together, he says as follows. Hinei b'inyin zos ha-miriva hoyom in ha-hechrech la-havir es-ro'as tlunos Yisrael. As we've explained, the type of miracle that was necessary in order to reassure the people, to convince the people that God was watching over them, had to be a miracle of the third sort. One that would utterly change around nature itself. And the Sfarno goes on, in the interest of time, we'll just try to summarize a little bit. The Sfarno goes on to suggest the following. What would have happened had Moshe and Aaron spoken to the rock? It's not simply that water would have flowed from the rock. The rock would have metamorphosized into water. The rock would have turned into water. Right? And that would have been a totally different experience. Not just that they had water. You know, again, you take a rock, you bang it enough, you drill into it, you could unearth an underground spring that's going to bring forth water from the rock. Here the idea was that they would speak to the rock and the rock would be transformed into water itself. If Klal Yisrael saw that, they would have no doubts whatsoever that the Ribbono Shel Olam was looking out for them. When Moshe Rabbeinu instead hits the rock and water flows forth, so the skeptics among them can say, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu is clever. Moshe Rabbeinu is able, you know, he has a map of the desert, he can figure out, you know, where the underground springs are. He's smart, you know, he spent time in the desert, he knows how to manipulate the desert. They wouldn't walk away, they'd walk away with water, but they wouldn't walk away convinced that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking out for them. They would still have that skepticism within them. So that was the taina, the complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu. Yan lo hemantam bi lahakdishenu, you missed out on this opportunity to really respond to Klal Yisrael, and now they're still left with that lingering skepticism. So the question is, okay, so why did Moshe Rabbeinu do it? You know, why not? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, "Dibartem el ha-sela, speak to the rock." So why would he deviate? So the Sfarno suggests the following, very, very interesting. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have confidence in Klal Yisrael. What's that got to do with it? You have to be on a certain level, at least Moshe Rabbeinu thought, to be deserving of that third type of miracle. And as much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, v'dibartem el ha-sela, v'dibartem el ha-sela, you'll speak to the rock, you'll speak to the rock, Moshe Rabbeinu says, these people, they're not on the level to be able to experience that kind of miracle. I can give them a Sug Beis miracle. I can give them a miracle which is quasi-supernatural. I'll hit the rock and bring forth water like I did 40 years ago when we left Mitzrayim. They're deserving of that. But to be deserving of such a transformative miracle, where the rock literally turns into water, I don't think they're on that madrega. Weren't they on that madrega by Korach? I mean, the Sfarno says that the miracle of the ground swallowing up the Adas Korach was a miracle of that nature. Yeah, okay, so maybe they're on the level of a miracle like that where it hurts them. But to be on the level of a miracle like that where it helps them, where it provides them with water, they're simply not equipped to be able to experience a miracle in such a way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu they are equipped. You know, you can do such a miracle. It's hard to say, but it sounds like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, even with HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him the people deserve such a miracle, you can give them such a miracle, he feels on some level that they're not deserving of it. So, Yad Lohem Mantem Bi, because you didn't believe in me, is not just a lack of, you know, a lack of following the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's ultimately a lack of faith in Klal Yisrael and their ability to be able to experience a miracle of this Sug Gimel, this third type of miracle, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that he was going to do for Klal Yisrael at this particular point. In a very, very, very interesting way of looking at the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, it's worthwhile. I summarized a lot of it. It's worthwhile to take a look inside. And then, again, if you have time, to take a look later on in the Sedra, where he talks about where the Parsha talks about the Shiras HaBe'er, the song which was sung by Klal Yisrael, celebrating the rock which gave forth the water, the well of Miriam, so to speak, the Be'er Miriam, and the Sforno's comments over there, which go together with his comments over here. But again, certainly something, if you have time over Shabbos and the inclination, certainly something very beautiful to take a look at and to think about. Okay, Rabbi Chananel ben Akasha Omer, Rav Sa'a Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Zakus, as you